It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Renee Ritchie, Andy Iannocco, Dave Hamilton from Mac Geek Gab. They're all here to talk about the latest. We're going to take a look at the new public betas on iOS, iPadOS, and TV and watchOS, and maybe sometime soon on macOS. Pros, cons, what works, what doesn't work. We'll talk about ARM and Apple Silicon and why it might be the end of the Wintel monopoly. And then finally, we'll get into the Apple TV Plus and some of the must-watch and some that are coming soon. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly. Mac Break Weekly comes to you from Twit's LastPass Studios. You're focused on security, but are your employees? LastPass can ensure they are by making access and authentication seamless, whether they're working in the office or remote. Visit LastPass.com/Twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 722, recorded Tuesday, July 14th, 2020. The ARM and other appendages. This episode of Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by LastPass. Give your IT department a break and supply them with the tools that really protect your business. Visit LastPass.com/Twit to find out how they can help you. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Apple. Joining us now from Montreal, it is the lovely and talented Renee Ritchie, YouTube.com/Renee Ritchie. Hello, Renee.
You make me feel so good, Leo. That's why I'm here.
Oh, you're great. You're
thank you.
You're carefully groomed.
I'm trying to survive this, Leo. I'm trying to survive all this.
You've got your Zoom shirt. I'm sorry, your Zoom hoodie on. You're ready to go. Ready to run.
Good to go.
Looking
forward to this.
Do you go out and how do you Pokemon these days? Do you go out in the park and do it?
I don't because, I have it on a separate phone, but iOS 14 still crashes Pokemon Go at launch.
So
if it's not on my main phone, I don't do it as much because contrary to what Andy Iannocco would have you believe, I am not that guy with 16 phones on my bicycle. That's not how I roll.
That's not what Andy tells me. Andy Iannocco from Iannocco.com and WGBH Boston. Hello, Andrew.
Oh, Renee, please just let me have that mental image and that fantasy of you just having this wall of glass in front of you. And just being
it's for a clash
beard getting longer and longer, fingernails getting longer and longer, except for the fingers that you operate the phones with.
I think the Pokemon Go guy actually the Pokemon Go grandpa has expanded his his phone thing. I think he has 64 phones on it now. You want to see?
It's amazing. It's like Game of Thrones.
That's like the Pokemon Go Dreamliner. That's great.
By the way, that's Dave Hamilton, the Mac Observer, joining us. Hey, Dave.
Hey. Thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
Good to have you on the panel. How did you like WWDC? I know normally this is a big deal for you to go out and have a fun time in Cupertino. Did you miss that?
I missed getting to see everybody in person, but I miss that every other day now, too, right?
So right, that's normal.
More of the same, yeah. But I actually kind of liked the well-produced keynote.
I
very much prefer over the let's do it live because they didn't have to spend as much time rehearsing, so they could spend that time producing and crafting and delivering the message efficiently. Like they were able to cram a ton in.
Yeah.
So I like that. The sessions, again, so much more efficient. So I feel like there's some things that have happened here that I hope will continue forward. Again, I enjoy getting together, though, so like I hope we get to do both.
We could probably separate the events, though, like have an informational WWDC that's online and then have a social event that's not. They don't have to be tied together.
No, but would people travel? I mean, some of us would if we knew that the rest of us would travel to a city to get to see each other and, like I say, remind each other that we're human. Even back when we were doing Macworld Expos, I always said that all of my like valuable work happened after the show floor closed, you know, at parties and dinners and where I, you know, got to, like I said, just remind each other that we're human.
Yeah.
So I would like the opportunity to continue to do that. This is fine, but it's not the same.
Good point.
We can't do the other now. So this is as good as it gets.
So iOS, anyway, welcome all three of you. iOS 14 is in public beta, which means a vastly larger number of people are using it, including me. I avoided the developer beta, but I thought, oh, everybody seems to, you know, you and Andy and Alex and everybody seem to be, Lori seemed to be getting along fine with the developer beta. And the public beta has been pretty good, except for a few cases like Pokemon Go. My bank, USAA, when I first launched the app, said, you're using a jailbroken iPhone and wouldn't run. Then today it said, you're using a jailbroken iPhone. Do you still want to go ahead riskily? And now it's just going, okay, I give up.
And the Facebook SDK went down again, and everyone got so angry at iOS 14 beta until it was pointed out that the Facebook SDK was... Please stop using that. Please stop using that.
But I have to say, I really... There's, you know, there's pros and cons. I really, overall, I like the widgets. I would say the only complaint I have is that unlike Android widgets, they're not live. So I can have music playing... And I will, you know, I see that I'm playing Dad Rock Essentials on my iPhone, but the widget doesn't show that it's playing, nor does it have a pause or skip.
It's live to tape. So, like, they come from the complications on watchOS, and that's where power efficiency was most important. And these are all SwiftUI widgets, so they've kept that power efficiency. So, basically, the app writes a stack of images on a timeline and sends them to the widget.
Yeah.
And the widget, displays that picture. And if a new one comes up, they can interrupt the stack, or they can inject into the stack. Or if the Siri suggested one thinks that, like, the calendar is more important because you have something coming up, or the reminder is more important, or your music's changed, it can force the stack to update. But they're trying to do it. They brought it all over from the watch, and I think it's sort of like when they redid iWork with the iOS engine and then had to re-add all the features, that they started with a blank canvas and there's no interactivity to speak of yet.
Android like widgets have that. I guess if you're saying, well, but you're going to get better battery life. Okay, although I note that a number of people are complaining about the battery life in the public beta.
It's got a bunch of debug code. But the worst thing is, like, you can't have pCalc. You can't have any of the to-do widgets. You can't have, like, anything that required button interactions inside the widget itself. And to make matters worse, to, like, give James Thompson a paper cut and pour lemon juice on it, the very beginning of the session says, widgets are not mini apps. I just immediately texted him and said, do you feel attacked?
Because his are, quite famously.
That's too bad, because the more useful they make these widgets, the more adoption they're going to get. And so if they just become, hey, look, here's a way to put a picture on your home screen, then it's going to be like, okay, that's nice. But then there are a lot of features that people will use for the first week or two and then realize that they're not using and then just simply fall out of the habit. But something like here is when your Uber is coming. Well, okay, that's going to be inapplicable for at least the next year. But that's the sort of stuff I'm talking about. These things that are interactive, just here is one actionable button to say, let me get a quick calculation, or better yet, let me swipe right on my home screen to get at my scheduler and my to-do without having to dip into another app with the full interface. It's useful stuff.
And the example I gave was the most obvious. Play, pause, music. My God. Yeah. Yep. I mean, that's... Yeah. Come on.
Well, and Andy's point about, you know, it's not... We're not going to have that for another year. You know, Apple's cycle means that what widgets are today, the iterative design, if anything changes, is going to be very minor. Adding true functionality to them wouldn't be until iOS 15 now at best. And that may cause a lot of people to just sort of write off widgets and lose some of that momentum there, which isn't good.
By the way, the clock icon is live. I don't know why you couldn't make a clock.
Well, they did the second hand for a while. I did a show with Matthew this morning. And what I love about Matthew, he came from the workflow team that became the Siri Shortcuts team. And what he's done that I thought was brilliant is he put all the widgets on his phone, and then behind them, he stacked all the Siri Shortcuts for that widget. So you go to calendar, you slide up on it, and you have all your Siri Shortcuts for calendar.
You
go to reminders, swipe up, and you have all your Siri Shortcuts for it. And he did that from every main app instead of shortcuts that he has, all of that in widget space now, which I thought was just brilliant.
So you can create on any widget spot a widget stack by putting multiple widgets in the same place. So you put the front-facing widget, the image widget, but you could put a shortcut as you swipe up that says pause, play, and all the other things.
Yeah.
I'm going to do that. That's actually a great workaround.
And he's changing his watch face based on shortcuts now, based on time and location. So it's like after 6 o'clock, his watch face just automatically changes.
That's a feature I don't know about because I still am not brave enough to put the new watch OS on my watch. Given that
you're brave enough, you're brave enough to put it on your daily driver iPhone, but your watch, yes. Which is a fairly,
that's because you can't restore your watch. I can restore this. If this is a nightmare, I could plug it in and go back, but I can't do that to the watch.
I guess that's true.
Right?
No, I totally get another watch. I'm the same way.
Just get another watch.
A few months.
I'm totally the same way.
Just get another watch.
Day and night watch.
I do want to know if I've washed my hands enough. I have to say, I really need that. And I want to be able to dance and get credit.
That keeps going on while I'm doing dishes. Like I'm doing dishes and it's like 17 more seconds. I'm like, the plate is done. No,
that's
17
annoying. More seconds. That's annoying. I don't know. Andy, do you have a phone that you can try iOS 14 on, or are you doing it on the iPad?
I have it on the iPhone. I don't have the beta on the iPad, but I have been playing with widgets. I have been trying to a lot of the new stuff and shortcuts I really like, so I've been trying to dig into that. I'm pretty happy. What I'm most happy with is just that for some reason it just seems a little bit tighter. It seems a little bit cleaner. It feels like they've taken a lot of the stuff that has been lingering since the days of smaller screens, lower resolution screens, and they've said, okay, well, look, everybody has 8K, 8K of 16-bit screens, whatever, right now. So let's make sure we don't necessarily have to make notifications quite as we don't have to make sheets as intrusive as they are right now. So I'm liking it so far. I am seriously considering getting an iPhone SE and making it my daily driver for the rest of the year. It's a really nice step forward.
iPad OS is a little bit less, 14 is a little bit less exciting, unless you really like handwriting.
They pushed the cursor stuff up to the iPad Pro release because I think that it would have been worse to have that iPad Pro release without the cursor support, like even less impactful.
Yeah.
But it took away from some of the WWDC stuff because I think if we'd gotten cursor and pencil and the iOS 14 stuff, we would have thought it was a pretty good update.
Right. Widgets do not behave the same on the iPad. They are still trapped in the today view.
Yeah.
Which is weird because you have so much space on an iPad that arguably that'd be a better place to put
them. The conditions were different. So like you can make the icons two different sizes, one that's bigger and closer together and one that has more density. And they also change position as you rotate. And there were like a number of factors that just meant it would take a little more time to do it. Okay. And they're all sheltered in place at the moment. So it was just, it didn't, as far as I heard, it didn't fit into getting it ready for WWDC.
So they're not against the idea. It's just that they had too many things to do and they couldn't do that one.
We love it when people are so excited about our features, they want them everywhere.
Yeah, that's a good line. Yeah, that's a good line. Anyway, should people, what do you think? What's the consensus? Should people, I mean, as you said, Dave, I put it on my main iPad and my main iPhone. I took a chance. Big Sur is not yet in public beta, right?
No.
That one, I've had bad experiences in the past using public betas on Macs. I'm a little less likely to do that. Mm.
I just don't see much of an upside yet.
Yeah.
It's been okay on my MacBook Air.
Okay.
But you know, there are a lot of things that simply aren't built to work with it yet. The big one for me is there's a couple of mail plugins from the folks at Small Cube that I simply rely on. They are a part of my workflow. They're a part of my very fiber of my being. And not having those available at my fingertips is kind of a deal killer. So for that reason, I can't run it for very long, you know, on my Air, but I switch back to it occasionally and it's like, it's relatively stable. Battery life is fine, you know, so yeah, it's fine.
I tried Catalina last year and it was fine for like beta 1, 2, 3. And I think then beta 4 Final Cut Pro stopped working. Oh, and I'm like, I'm never putting it on a main machine. Because it's not this beta. It's the next beta you have to watch. Everyone will tell you this beta is fine. Right. It's working great. Then you do it. And then the next beta just hoses you.
So then our advice would probably be, this really isn't for everybody. I mean, obviously our audience is more sophisticated than the average person. I would, for instance, on the radio show, I would say don't. But on this show, if you're listening to MacBreak Weekly, you're probably enough of an enthusiast
It's, if you have a spare machine, especially.
Yeah. Watch OS just is one thing.
Don't install it into a second volume.
Oh, we know. Yeah, that was originally, that's how people got around it in years gone by. That doesn't work anymore.
Well, it works. It'll let you do it.
There's no way back.
But then it changes the version of APFS is what happens. Right?
Because that makes sense.
Big Sur has to add all these different volume types like backup and those sorts of things. And so Catalina sees it and says, I don't know what version of APFS this is. This is newer than I'm aware of. And therefore, I'm not even going to attempt any updates, because updates with APFS mean create a new volume, install the update there, and then roll to that, right? Which is awesome because it totally protects you. But Catalina can't trust this version of APFS, so it won't do it.
Your Catalina will still run, but it will no longer get updates, which is risky.
Right. Now, I have no knowledge of this, but it's possible, of course, that a future version of Catalina, likely, in fact, would understand that this version of APFS is okay. But you put yourself in a chicken and egg scenario if you update now, because then you can never get
that version. Right. that's not
presumably. So good. I mean, I don't know.
I think I would say our recommendation is hold off on Big Sur, and maybe watch OS. But iOS and iPadOS seem like they're okay. What about tvOS? Has anybody updated to beta tvOS?
I haven't.
I think I did.
It's not a big deal.
I mean, if you want Family Game Center, which I have no need, I mean, it's there.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. I'm not going to worry about it.
We have to rely on our TVs too much right now, Leo. We have nothing else to do.
Yes. I'm not mucking up my TV.
Yeah, all the nerds want to know how 4K YouTube is working. Like, did Apple fold? Are they supporting VP9? Are they both doing AV1? Is there something else going on? What is happening? So political. So much drama.
So much drama. I think of all of them, iOS 14 is the most dramatic change, and I think good.
Yeah.
And by the way, one little feature that almost makes the beta upgrade a must-do, jiggle mode. Used to be you had to hold your finger on the icon for a long time to get into jiggle mode. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay, long time. Now, if you've got free space, you have to have some free space. It looks like I don't have. Oh, yeah, there's some. If you just hold it in the free space for half a second, it goes right into jiggle mode. That they didn't really tout that. Probably not a huge feature, but it's. Isn't it funny how sometimes a little thing like that, can be an important.
It's quality of life.
It is. Those 4 seconds matter.
Yeah.
Well, we're impatient. We need them.
I'm very impatient.
Yeah. Again, the thing that I've been experiencing with the iPhone, I haven't fallen in love with any really new features. I just like the experience. It's a little bit more polished.
Yeah. I really like the widgets, although I don't like announcing to the world that I've been listening to Dad Rock Essentials, but.
Try Yacht Rock this time. It's a nice upgrade.
YACHT, like my yacht.
Yeah. So you can hear like Brandy and Dancing in the Moonlight.
Oh, I do like that. The other thing I really like is the featured photo. I love having a rotating photo, but I don't know how the hell you get something into or out of featured photo in iPhoto.
I don't know. And mine was trolling me. It was showing me these wonderful pictures from WWDC Pass for the entire week. I'm like sitting here at home, San Jose, like standing with Lori at the podcast center and, having caught. It was just, it was the worst.
Oh, I thought, Renee, you would have a fix for me. Yeah. So you don't know. It's the way photos work.
It's the memory system. Yeah. But I don't know how to hack it. Like, I don't know how to tell it, like to enforce my will upon it.
Well, I'm afraid it's going to put something in there I don't want to see on my front page.
Mine is a repeat. It's like it's put stuff on there like a picture that did meaningless to me like 8 times over 3 days. And I'm like, I don't know why you're there. What are you doing to me? Why can't I banish you?
Yeah, I mean, it's fun though, and this is my new thing anyway. In general, I have the Google Nest Hub Max photo frames, and I just love it that I can have around the house. Slideshows, because I have taken over the last 20 years, all the digital photos I've taken are in there, and either in Apple Photos or Google Photos. So it's really nice to have these random selections show up. Yeah. It's fun.
Yeah, it'd be better if it were a little less random. If you could point it to an album and simply say, "Here's my wallet. Here are the pictures I keep in my wallet." Because you're right. It's not so much. It's like there are times where like I'm taking a burst of photos and like I lower the phone. And I was like, oh, great. Here's a blurry picture of the ground. Or there's sometimes where, oh, wow, good. A picture of the sign in the parking lot in the hospital. So I would remember where I parked while visiting my aunt who's dying 3 years ago. Thanks. I wasn't thinking about that at all.
It wants to be serendipitous discovery, so it doesn't want to constrain you to what you want because then it thinks you won't get what you need. But give me a toggle. Let me, like, if I don't enjoy serendipitous discovery and having these memories, oh, I Uncle Bob from 19 years ago, so great. Let me just have my favorites. Let me have the safety.
Favorites would be the obvious, right?
Yeah.
Why doesn't it do favorites?
Oh, just a toggle. Just a toggle.
Yeah.
Beta. Send your feedback, Leo.
Yeah. That's something easily fixed and probably will be. Yeah.
Probably by iOS 15.
they don't
generally make those kind of feature additions throughout betas. They could, but
that's my question. No. How in stone is this? Is this a test version of the final version? And they're not going to
earlier
features?
The better.
Okay.
Like beta 1, beta 2, get your requests in now because come beta 4, beta 5, they'll be in like showstopper fixing.
So it is conceivable you could get a feature. You're more likely to get a bug fixed than a feature, but it's conceivable that you could get a feature request.
It depends on the complaint volume. Like remember they've changed the width of fonts because people have complained and stuff like that.
It's true.
I hate this font width.
Well, it was bad for legibility. Like it was so thin, it was like people could not read it.
Actually, that's one of my problems with Apple News, and I don't know what to do about it. I don't know if I have Zoom turned on, but I can't read a single headline. It's always, "You won't ...
Yeah,
you know, good.
A third party developer could solve that photos problem, though, right? Because
they could make a photos widget.
Widget that allows you to select where it comes from. So that's sort of a solvable problem and more likely to be solved at least in the next year by someone other than Apple.
Widgets aren't hard either. Maybe I should mm-mm. take that on. The hard part would be getting talking Swift to UI, photos.
Leo the widget maker.
I've been playing with it. In fact, one of the cool things, just a little tip, in the that last page where it makes an app library out of its own folders, if you have any of your own apps on the iPhone, it'll actually give you, I have a Leo Laporte folder. It'll actually give you your own folder. So make your own apps, kids. That way you'll have a folder. But when you make the app, make sure that you identify yourself properly. Don't just say some doofus, because then you'll have a some doofus folder. It's all in Xcode.
That's a feature, not a bug, Leo.
It's all in Xcode, kids. It's not the com dot thing. It's the full name of the company in there. So make sure your company name is what you want to see as a folder. Just a tip. Let's see. What else? Did you read Jean-Louis Gasset's Monday note? So I thought I was overly effusive about the shift to Apple Silicon until Jean-Louis Wade, in former Apple president, back when, pre-Steve Jobs return era. Apple Silicon, he says it's the end for Wintel.
Oh, honey.
I kind of disagree.
We're just so glad that you're excited.
I'm not sure I disagree with him.
The point I feel is it's not Wintel necessarily. It might encourage Microsoft to do a better job of Windows on ARM. It might encourage Dell and HP to make more laptops with ARM processors because they want some of the characteristics that ARM delivers, like longer battery life. But it's very different. Like a lot of people keep saying Mac on ARM, and it's really not that. Like ARM is a tiny, tiny sliver.
Right.
Apple's not even using ARM cores. They're using an instruction set as part of a massive SoC with a lot of other components. And it's the important part.
And I
Apple
don't think
just
you
go,
can,
we want better displays.
Yeah, I don't think you can compete with that because Apple makes the whole stack. So
two big advantages. One is they're not a merchant silicon provider, which means they have no profit per loss per chip. They don't have to sell chips, and that's a whole different business. And they also only have one client, which is Apple. And so their only job is to run macOS as fast as anything on Earth. And that's a much smaller problem to solve than Qualcomm saying we have to support OpenGL on this, we have to support DirectX on that. We have, Samsung is complaining about this. Dell wants us to do that. Like it is a completely different animal.
Let me just read you the salient last three paragraphs because he makes really the whole point there. He says, Intel execs know they missed the smartphone 2.0 revolution because of culture blindness. And I think we'd agree. They couldn't bear to part with the high margins generated by the x86 cash cow. They couldn't see that lower margins could be supported by unimaginable volume. This is, by the way, an industry-wide problem. Nobody understood what the iPhone meant. Steve Ballmer
mocked it.
They
put a marketing person in charge instead of an engineer like Ballmer. Like it's almost exactly what happened to Microsoft. Yep.
Now, Gasse goes on, Intel's facing a more serious problem. The x86 commands high margins, not because of the chip, but because of the Intel Windows duopoly, meaning that all other things being equal, chips not running Windows get lower margins than an x86 CPU. Now, this is his deep knowledge of the industry. I don't know that, but that's what he says. Now, that union, that advantage, the Wintel duopoly, is about to disappear. Intel will face ARM-based SoCs running Windows on ARM with applications in PC-like quantities at lower prices. That leaves Intel with one path. If you can't beat them, join them. He says, and I've heard others say this too, Intel will retake an ARM license. It sold its ARM-based X-scale business to Marvell in 2006. It was a flop. That was their attempt to do mobile. And come up with a competitive ARM SoC offering for PC OEMs. In other words, Intel will get in the Apple business. They'll say, all right.
On what process, though? I mean, like, if they could do a good process, they wouldn't have half the problems they have with x86 chips right now.
Yeah, I mean, there's a technical issue. But then he also says margins are going to suffer because the ARM-based SoC field is already filled with very sharp competitors like Qualcomm and NVIDIA.
He hasn't seen Qualcomm's margins.
Right. Right. Not so high. Qualcomm makes its money on licensing, not on chips.
Yeah. Well, but they're charging a fortune for their 800 series this year.
Oh, are they? Yeah, the new one. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. In fact, a lot of phones are going, oh, I can't run an 865. Yes. That's just too expensive.
Or their prices are going through the roof.
Right. And that's, I don't think the market's going to bear these phones getting well above $1,000. So he also says, watch out for AMD doing the same, ushering in, and this is the important part, a new era of PCs based on ARM SoCs. And he says that's a problem because Intel's margins would be much lower there. So that really hits the business bottom line. It's not that Intel couldn't do ARM SoCs. They just can't get the margin that they're getting right now with the Wintel duopoly. I don't think he's far off on that. That's an interesting angle that I hadn't really thought about. Even if Intel, you raised the real issue, Renee, even if Intel does do that, are they going to be great products? Probably not.
Well, the duopoly part is maybe salient. Like if he's only saying the alliance between Intel and Windows is what's a problem, then that probably is true because people won't be as dependent on that. Even now, AMD is getting huge buy-in because they're doing such good work with Threadripper and everything. So that's already under assault. This probably adds to that assault, but I don't think the separate, maybe I was misreading. I don't think the separate parts are as problematic.
He says, you know, it's not that they're losing Apple. That's 7% of the PC market share. It's not a big deal. He also says Apple's a pain in the ass to Intel. They make demands and complaints way out of proportion with the amount of revenue. He says losing Apple's more symbol than substance. However, the impact on Intel and the entire industry will be felt beyond Apple's small share on the PC market. And I think that's the really interesting thing. And you raised that. This isn't ARM, Apple on ARM. This is Apple SoCs, systems on a chip, that potentially, because of Apple's tight integration with the hardware and software, could make a Mac be something so well beyond any other PC that, especially with low power. I mean,
Like the MacBook Air, I mean, it wasn't just the MacBook Air and they were working with Intel, but that defined a generation of ultrabooks, and Intel made a fortune off everything that spun out of Apple being so demanding and such a pain in the butt that one computer.
Good point.
And that's going to happen with Apple Silicon now, not with Intel.
And really, you could say, well, AMD Threadripper, but you that's not the laptop market. And the laptop market is so much bigger than that desktop market. The laptop market, you want a high performance for power ratio.
Yes.
And that's exactly what this Apple SoC could deliver.
Like a 12-inch MacBook with an Apple Silicon would be able to do 4K.
Yeah.
Like it would be able to render 4K.
And
you can't do with it.
Get 20-hour battery life.
Yeah. Without a fan.
Without a fan.
Because they're crazy about stuff like that, right? Like, I mean, that's the thing. So yeah, you're right. Intel loses that overly demanding customer that allowed them then to go and sell what they had to develop for Apple to everybody else. Yeah, fair point.
So, well, you know, maybe it is premature to declare the death of Wintel. It doesn't look good.
But yeah, also it's what Renee brings up is that this is something that Intel and even AMD can't deal with. If Intel were to manufacture an entire notebook from start to finish, they would be in with a chance. It's the integration, it's the level of being able to select every single component that's going to work efficiently with right. this CPU, with this GPU, with everything that's going to work together. They do build some hardware. They do build NUCs. They also build a lot of specifications. A lot of times, every time you see a brand new laptop or brand new desktop or brand new form factor, it is actually Intel saying, here are the ingredients that you need to build a system like the one that we've just deployed. Remember that the dual screen with the hinge in the middle of it, it wasn't just an idea that Microsoft had. It was actually prototypes that Intel was showing off to people, to manufacturers, saying, please build this. We think it's a cool idea. But because they can never do that level of integration, just again, Renee made a really good point. It's not just the CPU. It's not just plug out the Intel, plug in something else, and boom, Bob's your uncle. It really is. We get to build everything all at once as one holistic whole. And that's the sort of thing that no Windows machine can compete with. Do you think I think it's a very nice balance of power against what Apple can't compete with, which is, thank you, but you only make 6 different computers and none of them are suitable for our hardware requirements. We're going to have to go elsewhere or build our own.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, now, there are plenty of other contrary indicators. One, we don't know if Apple can execute. I mean, there's a big question mark.
That's true.
We think they can. It seems pretty clear they've done so well with their iPhones and iPads that they probably can. So I think that's a low risk thing. The other thing that maybe is a bigger risk is you cannot throw away the power of marketing and the willingness of people to buy crap. So it may well be that Apple offers this amazingly great combination of features, and it doesn't in any way impact Wintel. You know, that they just humble. Yeah. I don't know why people buy Windows machines today. It baffles me. They're demonstrably crappy.
I wouldn't say crappy. They just suit a need that Apple isn't filling.
Yes, there's a hole. And also, that's right. There'll always be that hole too.
Yeah, and also, I think what's great about Apple is that they don't make rental cars. They don't make fleet vehicles. They make vehicles that are really, really interesting and exceptional in their own rights. However, there are a lot of people that I really just want a Toyota Celica. Give me something that's not necessarily high performance, not necessarily the most reliable thing, but it's on the lot. I can get in the color that I want. They're not going to tell me that, no, you don't need cup holders this season. And that's how it works.
That's really the defense. That's why Wintel is not dead, is you could have a demonstrably better – you can have a demonstrably better platform. It doesn't, but you don't fill all the gaps in the industry. You don't make the fleet vehicles. So there's plenty of room for Wintel to survive forever. Gamers, there's a lot of places it can continue. There are still a handful of people who really like building their own computers with rotating LED fans. Those people
and RegEdit. Water cooling. Don't forget RegEdit. Like, I'm not going to give up my RegEdit. Yeah.
Well, but I mean, Windows is such an awful operating system. I feel so sorry for people who are using Windows because Microsoft can't code their way out of a paper bag. It's just awful.
I wouldn't say awful. I would say, again, mediocre.
Mediocre in your operating system is awful.
Well, no, I mean, okay, and it's
the, you're right. The you're old, right. The old, it runs.
The old MacBook keyboard was awful. The
that was awful.
One is mediocre. Yes, I'm saying that it's usable. It's fine. It serves that. I think one of the key differences, though, is that. Even though the Mac has its share of boring, productive software, where how exciting can it possibly be? It's just here to serve a function. I think that the Mac and iOS apps, the developers are more sprung towards, let's find a way to make this a little bit more elegant, or let's find a way to, we've got a successful app, let's find a way to sneakily make it better, as opposed to let's tread water and make sure it's compatible. So that's one of the reasons why the Mac shines a lot better. Once again, I try not to take my eye off of the people that look. I'm not excited. I always use my own relationship to cars, that I don't care about cars. I want a car that's reliable. I want to get in there, turn the key, it goes. I want to find a place to park, and that's really it. Whereas there are other people that are going to say, oh, my God, I can't believe that you think the Ford Crown Victoria is a cool car. I'm saying it is cool. It's simple. It's easy to repair. You can get parts in a junkyard. It's wonderful because if people aren't excited about this stuff, it's hard to get to – it's hard to convince them that there's a reason why you're spending an extra $200 or $300. Say you can tell them that, well, you're going to get better support. It's better built. You're probably going to get at least 5 years, if not 6, 7, or 8 years out of this versus 3 or maybe 4 out of your Windows machine. But again, they're into the store. They don't really care. And they say that these are the people that say, ooh, this has an LED keyboard. Great. Let's get this one.
Truthfully, it boils down to one word. It's this: Wintel will survive for the same reason Android will survive: choice. One thing that Apple can't offer is choice.
Right.
Apple's product
line is limited.
Say again, Dave.
Yeah. Apple's product line is intentionally limited, right? They know what they want to sell you, and they know what you need, whether you believe them or not.
Right.
And for most of us, that's actually okay, right? We take what Apple decides to deliver to us. But there are folks out there, like you said, that want choice. They want specific options. They want to dig in and do things and control things in a way that Apple simply doesn't allow you to do with the way they build their hardware and software.
As we've said many times, what bears repeating, Apple doesn't care about market dominance. Apple cares about revenue dominance. They're not trying to become a 95. In fact, it would be a bad thing for them to become a 95% market share operating system. They don't want that headache. They just want 95% of the revenue.
Well, the characteristics of a business that captures that much market is diametrically opposed to the characteristics of a business Apple wants to be in.
Yes. They don't want a mass market product. Period.
Yeah. Also, it is what drives them, is their passion, it's what they're good at. When I look at the industry as a whole, there are a lot of companies that are very, very boring, but they're doing impressive things. Apple is the restaurant that is exciting. Everybody talks about it, and every meal is exceptional. However, this kitchen is not capable of feeding 2,000 people a day.
Exactly.
Whereas Dunkin' Donuts, they need to – there are a lot of people who need their morning donut and their morning coffee and their morning culotta, and they need to crank them out at volume, and you can't get that from the boutique bakery across the street.
Yeah, Apple doesn't want billions served.
Yeah, exactly.
They want to make a nice steak. And truthfully, I don't think Apple – it was the folks at Thinx blogged Steve Jobs' wonderful interview at the D conference with Walt Mossberg and Kara Swisher in 2010. And what was really clear is Steve said it over and over again, and I think this is still true of Apple today. It's not they're saying, how do we make more money? They're saying, how do we bring the best product to a customer? We want to make the best product. And that isn't a mass-produced product. That's like the chef in the kitchen who's saying, I want to make the perfect steak. I don't want to make a billion hamburgers. And it turns out there's a benefit called revenue. But that's I don't think they're saying what's...
We take care of the... They believe they make a great product and
that's
the revenue follows. But
exactly.
I have a video coming out tomorrow and I'll spoil part of the conclusion. But Tim Cook is always very forthright on the calls. Whenever he says anything, he's very plain spoken. And when he introduced the idea of Apple Silicon, it was very similar to what Steve Jobs said when he introduced Intel. And that led to the MacBook Air. As he said, he didn't say that Apple was doing this for faster computers. A lot of us hope that they will be. He didn't say they're doing it for better battery life, although a lot of us assume that they will be. He didn't say they were doing it to save money, because as much as each chip might cost less, making those chips is going to cost billions of dollars. he believes there are products that Apple can't make without doing this. And he also believes that if Apple does their job right, that the customers will reward them by buying those products. Yes. And that's how they'll get their margins back.
That's the feedback you get. If you make a great product, people will love you and love the product. Incidentally, you make money at it. But I honestly think they're not driven by the money so much.
They're excited by the money.
They like it. It's a good thing.
let me put it this way. I think they're not driven by the money in the sense that anybody who has that much money in the bank is not driven by they're free not to be driven by money anymore.
There's no merch store on apple.com.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. I mean, back in 1996, oh boy, were they driven by
money. Oh, yeah. When they didn't have it, they should. Yes. Right.
That's when there was Apple merch.
That's true.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. Fine. So if we presume that the distinguishing factor between Apple and the rest of the world is the rest of the world offers choice, Apple doesn't, is that a negative?
Not in the presence of all these other companies that are offering choice. There's the you can almost imagine that if you think about the world in terms of a category of desktop computing, desktop operating systems, desktop computing, of which Apple is one, it really makes sense that this is one. This is the option that involves, I actually want a sandbox environment. I want, I don't want to be in the driver's seat. I want to be the kid sleeping peacefully in the back seat or watching a movie, not worrying about traffic, not worrying
analogy.
About maintenance.
Yes.
And there's nothing infantile about that. It's I'm willing to give up some control and because I would much rather just sleep in the back seat.
Yeah.
And on the flip side, there are people who said, gee, I've seen laptops with touchscreens with the screen that fold backwards 180 360 degrees. That's really for me. Or maybe more seriously for power users, I can either spend $30,000 on a Mac Pro, which is a generalized computer, or I can spend $30,000 building a PC that is optimized specifically for rendering video or specifically for crunching numbers for statistics, which will blow the doors off of any generalized computer. So that's why Apple has a wonderful role to fulfill. I think that this is why I don't like to go into, oh, well, Windows is terrible or PCs are terrible. They have weaknesses compared to Apple. However, the PC industry also has additional responsibilities that Apple doesn't have. And I'm just glad that of all the options on the table, Apple is an option, and it's the one that I want.
Yeah, I'm glad Android exists. I'm glad Windows exists. Same. I'm glad PCs exist, actually, because I don't run Windows. I like Linux. And I don't think I could ever run Linux on Apple Silicon. I'll run it in emulation,
maybe.
Not natively.
On ARM, Linux is doable. So,
oh, totally. It's compatible. That's why we can run it in emulation. But I feel like Apple's pretty locked down.
If Linus Torvalds isn't writing nasty grams about your silicon, then are you really a silicon company?
Isn't that wonderful?
So, you know, one of the things that excited me about Apple Silicon is exactly this. You know, Apple, like you said, has more money than they need. So they really aren't that hungry company that they were in 1996. And that hungry company turned out a lot of really cool things. Like, that hunger fueled them to become the success that they are today. They basically were forced to, right? Because if they didn't, that was it, right?
I think if you look at history, for instance, the reason Steve Jobs got fired the first time is because the cash cow was the Apple II. And he poured these resources into a failed platform, Lisa and Mac. At the time, the board thought, this is nuts. We've got a cash cow. What are you doing this Mac for? And I think Steve's only interest was in creating a better product, period.
Yeah, but it's when very different than Ballmer, who wanted to hold on to Windows until he wrote every dime of profit into the ground.
And we should point out, by the way, Microsoft, you may say, oh, no, you know, Windows is going to last forever. But Microsoft's business strategy is not relying on Windows by any means going forward.
Not anymore.
Yeah.
But when Steve came back, he was driven to make that company survive. And that meant generate cash now, right?
Like, he had to. They were down there last 100 million. I mean, they didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what's cool about Apple Silicon to me is Apple, you know, they're in this comfortable position. They aren't necessarily money hungry. But now they've got to protect their brand. They've got to protect their egos, right? Like, they've made a big gamble here of saying, we can do it better 100% ourselves. And now they've got to show us that they can. I think they can. I don't think it's going to be a problem, but I think they're aware of the gamble that they have laid on the table here. And I think that's a good thing.
It's a big gamble.
But I think it will be the thing that drives them.
Yeah.
And that's
it. It's good to have a spur. Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah. In fact, maybe they have been too comfortable with the success of the iPhone. That's the innovator's dilemma, where you have this incredibly powerful platform driving their market. I think that's the case Benedict Evans made, saying that they had shifted from a push strategy where they were letting the iPhone push the other products to a pull strategy, or maybe it's vice versa. They were letting the iPhone pull. Neil Seibert said that. That's right, in Above Avalon. The iPhone was pulling the other products along like a little choo-choo train. And now they're all the products are pushing equally into this new world of Apple
Silicon. They spent like a decade building up the iPhone as a platform, and now they're using everything they built for the iPhone as a platform to build the next 10 years.
But that's what you do when you're
super interesting.
If you're playing Monopoly and you're down to your last buck, you can't start building houses and hotels. Your first job is to get the money up so that you can do that. I don't think Apple ever lost the vision, though, to their credit. And that's a very tough thing to do of creating a better consumer product at every step of the way. I think they always you're right. I completely agree with you, Dave, that you've got to have that spur.
You've got something to drive you.
Yeah. You need something to drive you. Yeah.
Yeah. I know it's been true for me, like in various, not at the same levels as Apple, but you know, you can get, well, you build something and you get a little comfortable and it's, you know, some of that complacency can be okay. But, you know, for me, it allowed me to spend some time with my family. But then it's like, no. Got to, like, dig back in and let's get it done.
I wouldn't know, Dave. I've been coasting for 30 years now. And
that's not true.
I look forward to those days, my friend.
but on the flip side, that does get the nice thing about having the success and the financial cushion that Apple has is that it does allow a certain amount of freedom that there are other companies, if you wanted to come out with, if you really are convinced that this thing about Apple glasses or wearable technology glasses is a thing, okay, but all your shareholders and all of your workers are saying you've got 1 year and a half to make it into a smash success, or else we can't keep this thing afloat. Whereas Apple can not only start saying we're going to work on this because this is an interesting idea, we don't know if it's going to work out because we can't, it's a brand new thing, we can't know if it's going to work until we actually build it. So they can already, and then after 3 years they can say, yeah, maybe we don't want an Apple branded television, we're canceling this whole thing. And if they do think there's something there, they can release it and then say we don't even care if it's a big, if it's a financial failure for the first year and a half. Whereas we do, but we're going to use that, just like with the Apple Watch, we're going to use that, use the information to build the next generation of it and keep building up on it. That's the sort of thing you can do when you have that big of an iPhone cushion blow you to break your fall. And that's why I'm always excited when Apple takes these big risks, because very, very few companies are in the position where they can afford to take these big risks and stick with it until it turns out to be, until it really develops. Very few devices are especially when they're a brand new platform, our big successes right out of the gate. It takes time for developers to figure them out. Then after developers figure them out, that's when users figure them out.
So I'll throw a little monkey wrench into this. So ARM was actually started by Apple many years ago. They spun it off and divested. It's currently owned by SoftBank. They bought it from the British holders for $32 billion 4 years ago. SoftBank has announced it's exploring a sale or an IPO for ARM Holdings. Would Apple come along and say, we'll give you 100% on your dollar. 4 years, that's pretty good. Here's $64 billion. We want ARM. Would Apple do that? If Apple were predatory, if Apple wanted to control the market, yes. I don't think Apple cares, but what do you think?
I don't think they need it. Like it would be, they don't need it, and the headaches of owning it would be tremendous.
Well, they could. Could basically say, now we own it. No more licenses.
There's contractual obligations, and then there's antitrust. There's so many headaches that come with owning ARM that they don't need, because they barely need ARM anymore. It's convenient and it's great for many things, and it'd be a pain in the butt to have to make their own instruction set. But if any company could make their own instruction set, I just don't think it's worth it.
At this point, all ARM is for Apple is a checkbox, right, on the feature list. Yeah, it's ARM compatible. I mean, that's all they really.
I was joking that like Swift ISO would be like announcement that I would fully expect to see in a couple of years.
Yeah. What do you think, Andy? Would Apple want to buy ARM?
No, I don't think so. No. I think the same reasons why I don't think Apple would like to buy Disney.
What if Intel bought ARM? Or Qualcomm bought ARM?
That would be sketchy. Antitrust would rear its head. There's also it's not just buying ARM and owning it. It's also, you're also buying every single contractual obligation that they have to every other company. And that is a very wide range of devices. And I don't know if that is way too much trouble for whatever it's worth. It's much easier to use ARM as a way to strong arm other chip manufacturers into building exactly the sort of silicon that you actually want.
So, Dave, you think they should buy ARM?
No, think that would no. I mean, it would like Renee was saying. I mean, they would inherit so many headaches that it would either be just a management nightmare, or right. they would have to just try and shut down all those deals and then deal with antitrust up the wazoo.
Right.
I think they are very interested in seeing what happens to this here, because it might mean that they need to accelerate their path away from ARM and develop their own instruction set. But other than
that's interesting. So it really isn't even a tactical threat that maybe another competitor would come along and snap it up, because if that were to happen, they didn't really use the word ARM.
And you have so much notice. Like, Apple is probably going to, I expect they're going to go to ARM V9, like, one of the first people to go to ARM V9 when they released Mac Silicon. And it's taken a decade to go from ARM V8 to ARM V9. And I don't think there'd be an ARM V10 anywhere sooner than Apple could make their own instruction set anyway.
You know what's cheaper than spending $64 billion to buy ARM? Spend a tenth of that and get the engineers.
That's it. Yeah, but they might even have the engineers they need.
I think they have a lot of them already.
I don't even know that they need to spend $6 billion to do that. There are many other ways, most of them better, to solve this problem.
Right.
Remember,
it's not really
It's not a problem.
We have to remember that Apple is not moving to ARM. They're moving to Apple Silicon, and it's all about building something, not taking an off the shelf CPU, but building something that really, if you took it out of a Macintosh or an iOS device, it just would wander the streets alone and bereft. It doesn't make sense outside of what it is. So even if Apple were to buy for the engineers, the engineers would have to spend 2 years learning how to build an Apple CPU.
True. Yeah, I could see maybe Samsung, or I could see somebody else looking to acquire it. Maybe even Google.
There was this savage tweet this morning from Ice Universe, who's one of the well-known Samsung leakers, and he put up a little diagram saying, the world told Samsung to make to change the gap between Qualcomm and Samsung. Samsung said okay, and it shows Exynos even lower down compared to Qualcomm. And like, and that breaks my heart, because I want to see, again, Qualcomm's costs are so high that whole industry could stand a lot of competition.
Boy, it's hard.
Or just one CPU with a name as cool as Threadripper. I just, you walk Cortex. Into the showroom. It's like saying this, this car has a standard V6. This one has a V6 with a Hemi. Like, okay, don't know what that is, but here's my checkbook.
There's Threadripper's a good example, awesome though. Name. If you don't have a lot of cash, the choices AMD had to make between developing Radeon into a better GPU or making a better desktop processor, they put their resources into the latter and fell behind in graphics. And that's an example of where it's nice to have a piggy bank, because AMD is a little precarious at this point. You know, enthusiasts love it. And anytime I say anything against them, people are going to go, no, we love our Threadrippers. And it's true. They made amazing stuff. But that doesn't mean that they're not in a precarious position right now.
Any competent silicon team given enough time and money can make the most performant, efficient chip in the world. It's just that not a lot of them have the money and none of them have the time.
Just out of curiosity, Apple's going to fab this probably at TSMC. That's where they'll make it, right?
Yes.
And these guys are spun up and ready to do it, right?
5 nanometer.
I know. It's amazing what they can do.
Yeah.
Is TSMC only in Taiwan, or do they have... Because one of the things we've talked about, Foxconn's starting to build factories in India. I think a lot of countries, given the trade war going on and the political issues going on in the U.S. right now, are looking at ways to move manufacturing out of China. Taiwan, I would be a little worried, not because they're part of China, but because China doesn't like Taiwan and they're right there. I feel like that might be a little precarious.
I think though it's less like I don't want to say less important, but Apple basically funds their process. Like Apple gives them so much equipment and money to get first access to it, and then they can sell it to other people. That's more movable than Foxconn's because the Foxconn manufacturing is really like it's a lot of components. Not that this isn't complicated, but I think it's more resilient to be like to setting up fabs in more places.
There are a lot of suppliers all over the world. That they're really an assembler as much as anything else, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
TSMC makes the chips. They're the supplier. Yeah. They're the ones down.
It's the same way like Samsung or upstream. Samsung manufacturing makes Exynos, or Samsung Silicon makes Exynos, and Samsung manufacturing makes OLED panels and all of these suppliers.
Right. It's an interesting world. One more ARM story, then we'll then move on.
Apple. To legs.
Apple, yes, could be other appendages soon. We don't know. Apple promises that they're going to support Thunderbolt in the new ARM Macs, which is a relief for those of us who've invested in Thunderbolt. But that's not inconsistent with what I was thinking, which is USB 4.
Right.
That's the same thing, right?
It's inside USB 4.
Right.
Yeah, it's part of the spec, so... It would have been really weird if Apple said we will never support USB 4. It would have been weird if Apple had said we won't support Thunderbolt. I mean, they helped develop that technology, right?
It's partly theirs, partly Intel's. This is the statement Apple gave The Verge. Over a decade ago, Apple partnered with Intel to design and develop Thunderbolt. And today, our customers enjoy the speed and flexibility it brings to every Mac. Although, good luck finding an inexpensive Thunderbolt peripheral. They're all so expensive. Continuing with the quote, that was me, not Apple. They're expensive. We remain committed to the future of Thunderbolt and will support it in Macs with Apple Silicon. That leaves room for saying, well, yeah, what we mean.
I got the same statement for what it's worth.
Okay, so I'll give you credit.
No, but I'm just saying like that was literally their line because people saw the Thunderbolt 4 announcement and I think Apple was and people were like, why didn't Apple say anything? And I think Apple was waiting on the Thunderbolt 4 announcement because Thunderbolt 3 was licensed by Intel and it was exclusive to Intel for a while. And then they started licensing it. You had to buy a board if you wanted to use it with AMD that supported Thunderbolt. And it was a little bit of a thing. And Thunderbolt 4, as far as I can tell, is just openly licensed. I think people were sort of worried that Apple was going to abandon Thunderbolt or that Intel would be belligerent and say, no, you're leaving us. We're taking all our toys with us.
Well, because those of us who have bought Thunderbolt peripherals, and I have at great expense, would be kind of devastated if they didn't work. So Thunderbolt 4 is compatible with USB 4. Does it go the other direction if I have a USB 4 chip?
USB 4 is the name. So USB 4 is the name of the plug. So USB-C is the name of the plug. That's USB 4 is the name of the protocol.
Right.
Thunderbolt is an option on the protocol, as is power delivery. And it just makes consumers nuts.
Yes, because you can't look at the port and know what it is. And they were supposed to silkscreen stuff on there, but nobody does.
Yeah, a little Thunderbolt. But who knows? Like my parents have no idea what that is or need to look for it.
It's the most confusing thing ever. I actually did a whole Ask the Tech Guy trying to explain this, and I couldn't. It was confusing me.
The one thing that's easy to remember, it doesn't actually make this easier, but it makes it feel like it's easier, is that letters are, with USB, letters are for the shape of the connector. Numbers are for the protocol, or if you really want to like simplify it, the speed of the data transfer across the connector. That's it.
So
then it gets really confusing from there.
So what you're going to look for is a lightning bolt with the 4. And that will be support.
God help us.
That will support. Look at this. USB. These are all Type-C, by the way.
This is simplification, too. I love that.
Yeah. Simplification. One cable replaces other cables. USB 2, USB 3.2, which is a 5 gigabit standard. USB 3.2, the 10 gigabit standard. USB 3.2, the 20 gigabit standard. USB 3 with power delivery. USB 4. 20 gigabit and USB 4, 40 gigabit, so it's presumably Apple will support Thunderbolt 4.
Yeah.
Right. So that way you get it all. And you get power delivery, you get video, you get all the other stuff.
Until your sweaty fingers on the job site rub off the label on the cable.
Which they're not going to, because nobody wants to silkscreen it on the computer because that's ugly and there's no room.
no place to put it.
There's no place
to
put it.
Really thin MacBook Air.
It doesn't matter because if you buy the wrong cable, you're hosed anyway.
Oh my God, it's so crazy.
That cable doesn't support power delivery. That's only going to turn on your monitor, but it won't power it. I think, oh God, stop.
I just bought from Otherworld Computing. They make I have an iMac Pro and a separate data drive, external data drive. So they're not, you know, and my data drive died. It was USB 3.2. So I thought, well, here's a chance to upgrade to Thunderbolt 3. So Otherworld sells a enclosure that holds four NVMe M.2
nice.
SSDs in there, right? That should be fast, right? And I got four Samsung 970 Pro Evo SSDs, so a terabyte each. And then I get the thing and they say, oh, and if you want to use this in RAID, which I did, you have to buy soft RAID for $179. It's like, what? So
couldn't you have used Apple's built-in
RAID? Yeah, Apple only supports RAID 0 and 1. It doesn't. Right. So I am using Apple's RAID because I don't. That will, one other thing about soft RAID, you have to turn off the security extensions because Apple won't let you install it otherwise. So you have to go in and make your whole machine less secure to run this third-party driver at $179 so that I could use it as RAID 5. So I'm using it in scary RAID, which Disk Utilities supports RAID 0. It's striped across all four. It's a 4-terabyte drive now, which is nice. And I back it up, so I figure it's scary.
Make sure you back it up.
Yeah, I back it up. I actually back it up automatically with SuperDuper and ChronoSync to a big Drobo, which is... And then I also back it up four ways. I back it up to the cloud. I back it up to my NAS. I back it up locally. So if it dies, that's fine.
Dies.
If it dies, mostly I'll be pissed off because it's expensive. but the good news is that'll work with my new Apple Silicon Mac, right?
Yeah. As long as it's not the developer kiss.
Oh, crap. Really? That doesn't support Thunderbolt 3?
There's no PCIe lanes out of the iPad chips.
Oh, interesting. Well, no wonder people were worried.
Correct. Yeah. That's why that's what got people worried. Yeah.
Oh. Exactly. So they will.
Like, wait a minute.
Yeah. It will definitely. Okay.
It's not your mech anyway. You're just borrowing it for $500.
You're renting it.
Yeah. Anybody gonna get that? I thought, oh, I should do this, and then I said, well, what's the project you're working on? Well, it's this little Leo Laporte icon I have on my. I don't think they would.
It's for a folder.
It's a folder. I wanted a folder. Yeah. That's my project.
Yeah, if we were gonna do it. We couldn't talk about it, Leo.
Oh, really? That's NDA'd, huh?
That's what I hear.
Oh, okay. I know you don't because you would never. But good to know. Okay. So that's another reason why I didn't do it, because I wouldn't have been able to talk about it anyway. So what's the point? I know you're not supposed to benchmark it.
Oh, yeah. All you have to do is look at Geekbench. You can see.
People are doing it, but they're not announcing it.
Well, those benchmarks are also run through the translation layer.
Yeah, it's not even a good, it's emulation. Oh,
it's an interesting, as long as you read it for what it is, it's actually a really interesting
data
point.
It's pretty fast,
It's pretty freaking fast.
Yeah. That's Rosetta 2 at work, that's good.
Correct.
Good news,
Yep.
Our show today brought to you by LastPass. Here we are in the lovely confines of the LastPass studios. I'm the only guy who gets to use it now, which is really nice. I love it all alone in my LastPass studios. But we are very grateful to LastPass because not only do they buy studio naming rights, but they protect every entry point to our business. We sent employees home, right? All of a sudden, they've got the keys to the kingdom, the logins to the bank accounts and the databases and the websites and all that stuff. That's a little nerve-wracking. Thank goodness we've got LastPass Enterprise. We converted to that a while ago. It was just that this is actually wild. I knew I'd been using LastPass for a long time, practically since they came out. So that's maybe 12, 13 years. I can't remember. I know it's a long time because this is the 10th anniversary of Steve Gibson's LastPass Security Now, where he talked to Joe Segrist, the author, looked at all the code. Joe shared everything with him, how it's being done, and said, this is great. This is done the right way. It's still being done exactly the right way. Of course, it gets better all the time. So we've been using LastPass a really long time here at Twit, and it's saved us. If your IT department is facing people working from home, more devices, more applications, new threats, new regulations, all making strong security extremely complex. They need to know about LastPass. LastPass provides IT with strong security that is easy to use. That's important. If it's not easy to use, your employees won't do it. It's also easy to manage, and that's just as important. Secure every entry point, from shadow IT to apps to mobile and cloud services. LastPass's solutions give you visibility and control over every access point to your organization. That's so important. They do it, of course, with the best password vault in the world, but there's a lot more going on. For instance, LastPass Identity offers a simple and integrated view across all access and authentication tasks, so IT can see exactly who's accessing what, when, and where. You can increase security. This is the holy grail. You can increase security and convenience. Normally, it's one or the other. Increase security that slows down employees, hinders productivity, but at the same time, you need that security, and that's why LastPass is great. It makes it easier for employees. For instance, single sign-on. They have over 1,200 single sign-on apps. They have multi-factor authentication, not just fingerprint and face recognition. That's true. That's in there, but also kind of contextual authentication, things like location or IP address that really reduce user friction and improve security. It's kind of magical. Look, spreadsheets and sticky notes for your passwords, just not a good idea. And nor is you know, emailing passwords to coworkers so that they can share a resource. LastPass lets your employees do their work securely, no matter where they are, in the office or at home. They never transmit your master password. They don't have access to it. Data is only decrypted on device. It works everywhere, Windows, Mac, Linux, iOS, Android, every browser. They use 256-bit AES encryption. I mean, you know, everything they do, PBKDF2, which makes it much harder to brute force, virtually impossible, and on and on and on. We love LastPass. That's why we're so happy to be partnered with them, and we encourage you, if you are trying to secure your business, to check it out at lastpass.com/Twit. Of course, individuals too. Strong security cannot wait. Now is the time. lastpass.com/Twit. Find out how they can help your business stay productive and secure no matter where your employees are. lastpass.com/Twit. We thank them so much for supporting Mac Break Weekly and all of our efforts here. These are tough times, and LastPass has really come through for us, so we really appreciate it. What about this rumor that Apple is making thousands of semi-transparent lenses at Foxconn? This comes from the information. Apple reaches new stage in development of AR devices. They're working with Taiwan's Foxconn technology, and they are in a pre-production mode, I guess. The information says, of course, Apple refused to comment, but the information says their sources say the lenses are at least 1 to 2 years away from mass production, as is in all likelihood the AR product. But you've got to ramp up production. You've got to make tests. You've got to get them to developers. And that's what they're apparently doing right now.
Depends on how many thousands, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's not millions. It's not. I don't.
It's definitely a test run. It could mean they're making enough to test in house. It could mean they're making enough that they could send some to a few close friends. It could mean they're just literally just testing the manufacturing process, yeah, and that none of these are intended to be really tested by anybody. So,
according to a person familiar with the matter, the lenses had passed the prototype stage 2 months ago. And they've entered trial production, which would be how you would improve the process, make sure you can do them reliably and great, as you say, in great quantities, perhaps make sample units to send to executives or developers. You know, we just keep hearing this drumbeat that Apple's going to do this and they're going to do it in the next couple of years. I'd be interested.
If they're saying it's semi-transparent, that does suggest that they're using some sort of a side projection where you have essentially beams are going from left and right, and it shoots into the glass and then is diverted 90 degrees into the eyes. I've always been my big mystery with this project has always been, are they intending to do an Apple Watch in the eyeglasses sort of thing, where here is a notification or here is something actionable or here's a way to interact with Siri? Or are they intending to do something that is closer to augmented reality? And if it's the latter, it would be quite a thing if they were able to put that into a pair of glasses that don't make you look like, at best, Charles Nelson Reilly, and at worst, like, you know.
I don't mind looking like Charles Nelson Reilly. Geordi, I don't know.
It's quite cool.
Yeah. The lenses, this is the information. By the way, they're in what's called EVT, or the engineering validation test. That's when they start making a lot of them. The design is locked down, and they're now testing its suitability for mass production. The lenses use a polarized system similar to the technology in 3D movie glasses. Now, there's active and passive polarization, so they don't describe which. But that's what gives you stereoscopic, you know, 3D imagery. The AR lenses are tough to make, according to the source, because they're composed of multiple extremely thin layers of different synthetic materials, each of which is susceptible to bubbles, scratches, and other marks. They must be manufactured in clean rooms. And the person said, and this might confirm what you're thinking, Andy, the lenses are slightly larger than those found in eyeglasses typically.
Slightly larger.
There's so many problems. And again, you put a scratch on one of these things. Remember how mad that Steve Jobs got when he was carrying around the first iPhone with a plastic screen and said, fix this.
Yeah.
That could be a deal breaker.
Well, you could seal it with a glass lens. So I think now we have to have one.
Put a screen cover on it.
Yeah. Put something. Yeah. Yeah. How does that
work with your mask? Your mask fitter.
My Snapchat spectacles.
Why Casey Neistat was hosting Twit?
Yeah, no. Actually, I think it's I need a bowler. I think it's the Roger Stone look is what I'm going for here.
Leon Redbone. Go Leon Redbone. If you could be anybody, you could be Leon Redbone. Shitter.
The Riddler.
Yeah, bigger lenses. I don't think bigger is bad. Bigger is more stylish. And it's interesting they're making bigger lenses, because that's a bigger field of view as well.
Can they be heart-shaped?
It's exciting, because the thing is, you can either have glasses that don't do a whole lot, but they are wearable and they last a good amount of time, or you can have something like Magic Leap where they're awesome and they do incredible things, but you need to have something on your belt. You need to have a device that's a lot more nimble than even an iPhone, I think, in order to keep it working. It's interesting to I think that whatever Apple does, it's going to be a lot like the original iPhone, where we've seen touchscreen devices before, we've heard of multi-touch before, but we haven't seen them put together very, very effectively until the iPhone came out. I think that we're going to see a lot of random technologies that we've heard of and a lot of almost their products that we've seen, and it will come together into an actual productive product. But if they decide to ship it, which is still very much an if.
Apple's not going to ship something that they feel is like ham-fisted just to get it out there, right? I mean, I think you're right. I see it more along the lines of what we experienced with the first Apple Watch, not necessarily the first iPhone, although you may be right about that, you know, it's like, oh, I never thought about putting these things together this way. That's Apple's stock and trade, right, is taking a look at products that are out there and saying, we have a better way of doing this, and here's what it looks like. So,
I mean, the iPhone has enough power, I think, to power those kind of features in its own display. The question is, could it maintain, if you're doing it via Bluetooth, if you're doing it even via direct Wi-Fi, could they maintain that link with little enough latency and with enough reliability that you wouldn't suddenly be, wait, where did the little flaps I'm supposed to be generating? Yeah, you can't have things saying Bluetooth, when Bluetooth audio fades out for half a second, or a fraction of a second, it's not a big deal. But when you're counting on like looking at a certain piece of information and suddenly disappears and you see a spinning whatever for a half a second, then comes back, that's the why did I spend $800, $1,000, $2,000, even $300 for this thing?
Well, that's why I think the watch is a good analog here, because the watch, it basically connects, not basically, it connects exactly those ways, right? It's either Bluetooth or Wi-Fi, direct Wi-Fi to your phone. And it you know, if it loses that connection, the watch still is doing enough on its own so that when you're looking at it, you aren't really aware that it's lost. There's some times where it's like, oh, wait a minute, like something's wrong here. But otherwise, the watch is a pretty fluid, seamless experience, even though it's relying on, you know, Bluetooth, which is so unreliable, it's ridiculous. But but it sure is low power, and that's good. So, yep.
Apple had started opening its stores. Now they're going to close them again. And that, now they're even saying we may not get a full return to work this year in our U.S. offices. They're trying to get retail folks to work at home. A lot of the stores in hotspots reclosed. So that's a lot of Southern California. If your store is closed, they sent this message to employees, please sign up for retail at home. Please talk to your manager because we really need to make sure we shift our teams to greet our customers remotely in this time. We may need to be working remotely for some period of time. That was in a video created by Deirdre O'Brien, the senior vice president for retail. This is not the experience, she said, we want to have for our customers. So we really want to make sure we're moving to where our customers are to help them during this very challenging time. As you know, people are really dependent upon their devices, especially right now. They'll get name tag lanyards they can customize with their own Memoji that will help retail staff be more recognizable when they're wearing face masks. 90 reclosed of the 271 locations due to COVID spikes. They've also shut some stores in Australia. For locations that remain open, of course, the company continues to require face masks, both for customers and employees. Temperature checks upon entry. They're also sending COVID-19 tests home. They've started a program that allows retail and corporate employees working remotely to get tests mailed to them, and then you can do the self-test and then send it to a testing site. This is all from Bloomberg. Last month, Apple started letting corporate employees returning to its offices take on-site COVID-19 nasal swab tests. So they're testing people at home now as well. It's just, it's got a, their story is no different from every other business in America. Right now, it's just everybody's struggling a little bit.
Well, they're not staying open like Disney.
Oh my God. Have you seen the pictures of people in line at Disney attractions, at Disney World?
And it's, the terrified workers, like just tweeting out their helplessness.
Yeah, because they've got to work. They don't make any money otherwise. They're not going to get unemployment if they say, no, I'm not going to work.
They say no, yeah.
Meanwhile, Tim Cook took home $133 million last year. Not that he didn't deserve it.
Yeah, it's exactly.
Pittance compared to founder's money, Leo. Like, Tim is just never going to have founder's money.
No. In fact, he was only number two in the U.S. Elon Musk got more than $500 million. A lot of that was stock.
Founder's money.
He got founder's money.
Yeah. Stock. Several times over.
Yeah.
Poor man. He can only be part owner of a soccer team, not a professional football team. And it just digs at him all the time.
Oh, man. Cook is number two. He's a little higher than Tom Rutledge, chairman of Charter Communications. You know, cable companies, that's a low-margin business. He only made $116 million last year.
But Tim is giving most of his to charity after he puts his nephew through school.
I know.
So
I love
the more
that.
He gets, the better.
Don't you love Tim? Yeah. His base salary is $3 million a year. That's fair.
You can live on that.
He can live on that. $7.7 million in incentives.
There are people who get paid far more and achieve far
less. Oh, CEOs are vastly overpaid. The rest coming from stock that vested during the year. So over time, Tim's got a lot of stocks vested. Sundar
Pichai.
Doesn't
seem like attention is Apple's problem with him.
Oh. Sundar, remember when Steve Jobs said, I'm only going to get paid $1. Oh, and I want a private jet.
Yeah.
My favorite story was when he kept buying Scott Forstall lunch, and Scott's like, but I have to buy you lunch. He's like, no, Scott, I only get $1 a year salary. I don't know where all this money is actually coming from. And then everyone just assumed it was Woz's account.
It's magic. It's magic money. Nobody asks.
No, certainly nobody wanted to ask Steve about it.
No, Steve, what do you get? Running up a tab? What's the deal?
Mr. Jobs, we have to talk, sir.
Mr. Jobs, you haven't paid your lunch fees in 16 months.
Cafe Max is $18,000.
No more grilled cheese for you, sir. Alphabet
with Steve. A baseball bat standing outside his door.
Here's a $20 bill. Ramen, I bet you haven't seen one of these in a long time, have you?
Alphabet ramen, but you can crumble the dry ramen on top. Makes it extra delicious
and crunchy, which is good. Who doesn't like a little texture? Wouldn't that be sad? Actually, you know what? Steve Jobs probably would be happy to live on ramen. That would be like his dream.
I don't know. It's got a lot of sodium in it. I think he probably wants that.
For a person who liked ramen, he had an awfully nice car.
Yeah. So well, he didn't pay for that either. So
never with a license plate on it, though. Yeah. Right?
Exactly.
Right. Got to get a new one every 6 months. That's right.
He believed in a simple life.
Forstall bought his used cars every 6 months.
Oh, really? Is that how it works?
Maybe not every 6 months, but Forstall was known for driving, you know,
Steve's old
beaters.
Oh my God!
Exactly. Yeah.
So, well, lightly used. There was some pressure, if you really liked working here, Scott, you would.
Well, the hilarious thing was like the story about like Apple is famous for its Cars Club, and like you already have like Phil and Eddie buying Singers, which are like $1 million restored Porsches, and other people driving Mercedes, and then Jeff Williams driving like a 13-year-old Honda.
Good for Jeff.
Because the operation guys never spend any money on anything.
No, he knows. Money, he knows the value of a dollar.
Also, that's got to be a bad idea because, I mean, I didn't know Steve Jobs personally, but if there's one executive at Apple that would be rolling back an odometer, it would probably be Steve. That's my guess.
Honest, I only drove it 15 miles on Sundays.
Yeah, this you Apple, drove
this
it 14
iPhone
miles
clock widget
backwards.
Looks a lot like the odometer on a Mercedes. Why is that, Steve? No,
why do you have an intern just driving your car backwards in the parking lot all day long, Steve? I got a buyer.
Cook, just to put this in perspective, $133 million this year. Most of it, really, his salary was $10.7 million. The rest was stock. Sundar Pichai, stock salary all in, $86 million. Alphabet CEO. Intel CEO Robert Swan, $99 million. Satya Nadella, Microsoft CEO, $77 million. It's not like anything over, I don't know, $50 or $60 million is probably enough. So it's not like they're poor.
It's just
I don't feel bad for them.
No, it's that stock, though. Did you see what Apple closed at yesterday?
Oh, my God. Is it still going up?
It went down last night, but I don't know what it's doing today.
It dipped a little, but I think it's up today, at least at the moment.
I feel like such an idiot, because when this thing started, in January and then later, I think in March, I got out of the stock market. I said, this isn't good. Mm-hmm. This is going to be bad. So January was early, so we managed to lock in all the – that was for our company pension fund. Got all of that out of stock, thank God. And then I got out of all – index funds, but I sold all my index funds. And then the stock market, how dare it, goes
– It has no correlation with reality, Leo. These are not the same people that are suffering.
You and me, Leo, we are perfect at predicting the peaks of the market
and getting out at the wrong time.
Getting in at the wrong time, getting out at the wrong time. I'm a master of this. If anybody wants to know, sign up for my newsletter.
It's just depressing.
Buy when Forrest Gump buys. We learned that last week.
So depressing. Right? Look at the – I love this Apple stock chart when you go from the day it started – because it's such a low number compared to the current value that it's basically flat, and then it starts to go up, and then whoop, currently doing quite well. And the COVID doesn't seem to have year to date took a little dive in April or
a little?
Late March.
That was a pretty big dive.
It's recovered fully. It's higher now than it was.
Yeah.
You know, at the beginning
it's almost
of the
double
year.
what its dip was, right?
So. Yeah. I'm so smart getting out of the stock market. Now, to be fair, I own no Apple stock. So, or maybe I did. I only owned S&P 500. So you know, that, because I didn't want to have any text. I didn't want to have any investment in tech companies' success. Just in America's success. Who knew America went on being successful when the rest of us are suffering? I don't understand it. Yeah. Apple's maybe closing stores in the U.S., but they're opening the big new Beijing flagship store. Going to be pretty. It'll open soon in Beijing. This is the new flagship design language. Large glass walls, slope metal roof, elaborate stonework. It's similar to the Chicago Michigan Avenue store, apparently. But
it's a gorgeous store.
Yeah. Let's all go to Beijing. Do not.
I feel like by using TikTok, I'm already there.
I know, right? Well, they're already with you anyway.
Sorry, we're not wanted.
We're not allowed. Can't come in. Apple says, do not cover your MacBook camera. Do not put Band-Aids on it. Do not. If you're going to put anything on it, make it as thin as a piece of paper. The reason people are bringing in laptop screens that are cracked, and it's a very distinctive, apparently very distinctive crack, a line straight down, because the tolerances when you close the laptop are so tight that you're actually cracking it because of that cover. So Apple's saying, do not put a sticker, a tape, anything over your camera. Don't worry, Apple says. There's no way to turn on that camera without that green light coming on.
So you don't have to. But still. but it can come on in an awful hurry. and you're not ready for it. They did say, if you got your micro calipers, anything that's 0.1 millimeters is fine. So I always, one of the first things I do to a notebook is to like put a little strip of tape over it, enough so that I can see the light, but I can't see, but it's blocking the lens. And so I can see the green light come on, but I'll hear, hi, Andy, I can't, something wrong with your camera? Can you switch to the main camera? He's like, dark. Nope. Yeah. That is a good point.
So if a post-it note would be okay, probably.
I would imagine so.
Yeah. It's got to be really thin.
But get out your drill bit and, you know, pop that thing out of there. You'd be good to go.
Yeah, or remove it before you close it. Yeah. I don't care if somebody sees me dancing around in my jammies. I don't mind.
It worked for Tom Cruise. I mean.
Yeah, but I don't have Tom Cruise's butt.
He doesn't have yours either, YouTube Andy.
Channel, Leo. There's your TikTok channel, Leo. You dancing around in your jammies. Perfect. That'd be perfect. Actually, that's already
Charlie
on.
There's Leo Laporte.
battery gate settlements. Get ready for your bag of pop chips. If you know the serial number of your old iPhone 6, 6S, SE, or 7, you can submit a claim. You may get as much as $25 back. This is because, as Apple revealed in 2017, they slowed down iPhones. Apple said it was to keep them from crashing as the battery life dwindled. They got dinged. There was a class action lawsuit. Apple agreed to pay up to $500 million, although denying any wrongdoing. Submit your claims to a website set up by the United States District Court for the Northern District of California, but you will need that serial number. In re Apple Inc. Device Performance Litigation, case number 18/MD/2827/EJD. So
I got the Quebec one a year ago, I think. I think we had a distinct one in Quebec.
Did you get money?
It kept spamming me with money, but it's like, it's so little money for so much effort that like you don't do it. And then I assume that that's their plan to begin with.
Right. So if you don't know the serial number, you may be able to locate your serial number by filling in the information like Apple ID, device type, first name, last name, street address, city, state, and zip code. And then maybe they can find it for you. So that's good. You don't have to remember your serial number.
They have the database. They can perhaps do the lookup.
Yeah.
If they see it.
Sir, that's a Samsung phone. Can you please stop submitting it? Sir, please submitting.
Let me just try.
But it's slow. Yeah. I thought that's what this was about.
But it's still slow. It's Apple's fault. They should pay.
I had all of these. Does that mean I have to do seven of them?
Yes, sir.
If you want all seven bags of pop chips. You get $175.
Oh, okay. First name, last name, street address. Oh, my God. All right. Search. Yes, I would like to use that corrected street address. Does not match our database. Please double check. Okay. Let's see. What else did I have?
Exterminate.
I only have to do the... Nope. Does not match our database. Exterminate.
Dance like a monkey. How much do you want this money? Dance.
Okay. I only had the plus sizes, so that should...
Gotta dance in your jammies first.
Does not match your database. None of them doesn't match, so... You lose, Leo. No $25 for you.
Yeah, the attorneys get to keep your money. So
never use my home address. I always use the company address. Oh, the brick house. Of course. I wasn't here. When was this? When was this iPhone 7? This was a long time ago. Yeah. What was the brick house address? 140 Keller?
Right.
Oh, I'm going to get my money now, man. Oh, here it goes. We do not compute, we do not match. None of it. None of them. I can't get any of them.
I wonder if you'll wind up making more than minimum wage on this rebate by the time you get it.
None of them match. Okay, what else could
this
it
is
be?
Why I never did mine.
Oh, my God.
They're counting on that.
I mean, who would have your serial number unless you still had the phone?
You don't keep a database of all your serial numbers? Maybe in a LastPass note or something?
Actually, I do now. Believe it or not, I actually do now. No. You know, my mom still has her iPhone 6. I could probably get some money for mom. No recognition at all. None. So there you go. Just I did it so you don't have to.
Well, it's really, really important that the people who have been maligned by Apple on this aren't allowed to, in exchange, take advantage of the situation by doing something that no one can possibly figure out what they would possibly do under whatever motivation. But still, it's important that you do these validations correctly.
One of the features of iOS 14 that I have not yet encountered is that when somebody's looking at your clipboard, Apple says, hey, get it. They're looking at your clipboard.
Oh, I get that all the time. Like constantly.
Do you?
Yeah.
Huh.
Not the malicious one. I never got the malicious one, but I got like, if you paste between two different apps, it should come up or different devices.
So, of course, TikTok got busted. They said, we're going to fix this. LinkedIn said it's a bug.
Yeah.
56
and some are saying
apps.
It's an SDK now. That there was an SDK that they were all using that was doing
it. Was
this.
A Google where does that data go? Ads SDK.
Yeah.
And I think what it really means is that Google's ad service was snooping your clipboard looking for keywords so that it could target advertising. I'm willing to bet that's what that was. So, yeah, it was a Google ad SDK. So, bug or feature, you know. Anyway, LinkedIn is now being another great class action lawsuit being sued.
So everyone copying and pasting their favorite nude facial concealer makeup was getting the worst ads imaginable.
We're not looking at your passwords. We're not looking at anything else. We're not exfiltrating it. Google's just going through your clipboard looking for stuff you might be looking for an ad for.
Oh. Yeah, I really think that in addition to all the really great security stuff and privacy stuff that Apple's putting in to the operating system, I would love for them to have a standalone security app that simply will do things like I'm going to scan every one of your apps to let you know here are SDKs and we understand to have been operated, but they're not necessarily dangerous, but we would like you to know that when you use an app that's using this SD that's using this code, it might be a really nice pop the bubbles game, but it's also sending information to these ad networks.
Yeah.
Not just by network tracking, but by simply saying here we recognize this code, we recognize this package. This is why Apple had some good results when they decided to start naming and shaming battery hog apps. And once they simply say, oh no, we're not going to ban you from using these APIs, but we're just going to put up a little pop up that says, oh, by the way, your happy little fishy bubble game is doing something that you, the user, might not take kindly.
Bravo,
to.
Apple. They deserve a lot of credit for that. Have you seen Greyhound yet?
No.
Nope.
So good.
I've heard I have to watch it like as big as possible and as loud as possible.
Yeah. It's kind of like 1917 or, you know, it's one of those big war movies. But like 1917, it's a small, it's only like 36 hours. It's very condensed. Apple paid $70 million to run it exclusively on Apple TV Plus, which means you don't pay the $20 rental fee that you pay for other first run movies. So that's good. You have to subscribe to Apple TV Plus. But most of us, I think, are getting
it. I saw a ton of people doing that just to watch the movie.
I think it's a good show. I think it's a really good movie. Tom Hanks wrote it besides starring in it. And it's historically, I think, very interesting. Apparently, Apple has a first look agreement with Idris Elba for TV shows and movies. I think that's a good thing to buy. I love Idris Elba. He was rumored he was going to be the next James Bond. I think this...
I would have loved that.
Yeah, he would be so good. So we'll see. Apple TV spending the money. They landed Snowblind. Are you a Snowblind fan?
I'm not familiar.
Oh my God. iMore has denied me access.
What? Maybe your system is out of control, Leo.
Access denied.
First Dave Hamilton, now iMore.
You are not authorized to access this page. Well, I was just going to read your story about Jake Gyllenhaal and Snowblind. Let me go to the front page. Maybe I can get there that way.
And Lori Gill's not here to answer for herself.
Now there's so many good things in here. I just want to stop and reveal. This is good. You guys are good. I mean, you're former guys.
Yes. I was there, I think, when they did this new homepage. I think I was there. I don't know if they've changed it.
You
since
still
then,
write once a week for iMore, so.
Yes.
It's still you. It's still
I'm still
you.
Blamed. I get zero credit and all the blame, which is, I think, exactly what they wanted.
Let me search for Gyllenhaal. That's going to be a unique.
I just figured last week I put my foot so far through my mouth that I could walk on it again.
Yeah.
I'm going to just stick out of the Apple TV Plus stuff this week.
Deadline has the original exclusive. It's saying that in a six-way bidding war, Apple Studios acquired Snowblind, which is the Boom Studios graphic novel. I thought it was a different one that was made into a not great movie.
I don't remember that. Yeah. Okay. They're buying up stuff like crazy. They won another bidding war for the movie won't even be made until next year. Antoine Fuqua and Will Smith, a story about emancipation. I think it's called Emancipated or Emancipate. But it sounds like a really good and topical story. And what did they bid? It was like $120 billion. They were in a final bidding war between Sony and Apple TV. They want this prestige stuff. What I like about it is, as an Apple TV Plus subscriber, I don't have to pay for this. It really irks me to watch a first run movie for $20. Just I know it costs more to go to the theater, but you
especially
don't know,
with a group of people.
I know you don't know if it's going to be good or not. And
I would love that because I don't want to go back to the theater anytime soon. So
the popcorn's much better at my house. Yes.
I would pay $100 for a first, like if they were to put Black Widow or Wonder Woman 1984 or James Bond, whatever your soul is worth left to you. I don't know what the next one is called. I don't remember. But any of those, I'd pay $100 to watch them first run at home without having to go to the movie theater day and date. That'd be, I would love that.
I don't know about $100. Even at 20, my thinking is, how patient can I be? Because for $20, I can buy it on Blu-ray.
I have zero patience.
$20 is right there. Given that I'm not going out to the movies much anymore, that if there was a movie that I would definitely pay $20 to see Wonder Woman first run, basically to avoid hearing spoilers from other people, and be able to enjoy it as is. But yeah, we're trying to find our own level of water.
Yeah.
At this point.
Also, like me and Andy are single people. If you have a family of five, it's probably a much different set of math.
Exactly.
For what
I was just going to say, with four of us in the house, like $20 is, I mean, it's wow, we get to go to the movies for $5. That's great. Let's do it.
It also depends on how desperate for entertainment you are, right?
I'm so desperate, Leo.
Yeah.
Quarantine. So
yeah. Well, yeah. I feel like there's a lot.
It was really good, but I need more.
I'm going through old crappy reality shows and all sorts of. I'll watch anything. It's just not $20.
Old procedurals.
Procedurals. See, I'll see every CSI before I'll pay $20 for the new Steve Carell movie.
Finally, time to go start on The Wire if you haven't seen it.
Oh, I've seen
all
that
these other
many
movies.
Times.
That, there are a lot of series. Oh yeah, that too.
The time is ripe for someone to release the actual original unedited WKRP in Cincinnati.
With the actual music?
With the actual music. And I know they've gotten close to like 90%, but 90% means the Beatles and the Eagles and Michael Jackson and like those aren't in there.
Is it a clearance issue or a cost issue?
Clearance issue.
Yeah.
So they can't get clearance at any price? Or they could...
They could buy the rights to the Beatles catalog and then that.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
So any price is a pretty
broad term.
Yeah.
Any reasonable. There's no Frand licensing on the Beatles music.
No.
No. Alas.
Yeah, I know.
Apple has made a commitment to $2.5 billion to combat the housing crisis in Silicon Valley. They're allocating now $400 million of that towards affordable housing projects and homeowner assistance programs in California. Thank you, Apple. So they're spending money on movies, but they're also spending money in the community, and I think that's really good. They're sending the money to the Housing Trust Silicon Valley, which will create more than 250 units of affordable housing across the Bay Area, as well as mortgage and down payment assistance fund and an affordable housing investment support program that they're doing in conjunction with CalHFA. Thank you, Apple. That's yes. Great. I think that Silicon Valley companies like Apple get a lot of blame for the high cost of prices housing in Silicon Valley, and probably rightly so.
Also that they won't let them build new housing? Nobody wants it in their neighborhood. And also people who have suddenly found houses are worth millions of dollars want to protect their investments by not increasing stock.
Yeah, there's all
like
sorts
it seems
of,
like a multiple of problems.
Yeah, there's all sorts of issues. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
There's a lot of things going on. There was a New York Times article a year or two ago about how someone wanted to turn a laundromat that was doing okay, but they figured, well, this property would be more useful to people as like middle income housing. And the amount of bureaucracy and also like neighborhood opposition to new housing in the neighborhood was so great that I don't even know like where it wound up, where it was so expensive that he's just of all the people and all the activists who are saying we need more housing, and then being confronted with, well, it's not just the people who want to take an apartment building and turn it into like a three-story private home with a pool and a bowling alley on each floor. It is sometimes just a more practical thing that's really hard to do. It's a hell of a problem.
If you too would like a folder with your name on it,
damn,
it's not hard to develop for Apple. They give away the resources like Xcode. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot to learn. I actually am working through the Big Nerd Ranch's 7th edition of their coding and iOS book. It's really, really good stuff. I've also started taking the Stanford Computer Science Course 193, which is a really good course in iOS development. That's a little faster paced and tougher. But Apple also has their own resources. They have new Develop in Swift and Everyone Can Code curricula. This is the easiest of all because it's aimed at students from grade school to college. So, you know, my biggest problem with a lot of this stuff like Swift Playgrounds is you spend time learning Swift. That's the easy, for at least for me, that's the easiest part of it. The hardest part of it is learning all of the GUI commands and stuff in coding for Apple. There's a very high learning curve for doing that. But I imagine if you're trying to learn Swift that these Develop in Swift will be great. Everyone Can Code introduces coding to students in grades 4 through 8. It uses puzzles and games, and the Swift Playgrounds app, the Develop in Swift curriculum, is for older kids who are looking to develop skills that employers might be looking for. And it certainly is a skill that is in demand. So check out the new inexpensive curricula. They're all in Apple Books. Develop in Swift curriculum has 4 books. Develop in Swift Explorations. I'm going to definitely take a look at these. Develop in Swift APCS Principles. That'd be for
I would guess, high school advanced placement classes and developing Swift fundamentals all live today. Looks pretty good. And you can do it through Xcode. Xcode has a nice playgrounds feature.
Yeah.
Which really lets you kind of mess around with this stuff. And there's everyone can code adventures. Everyone can code puzzles. Swift is a nicely designed, well-done language. But there's a lot more to coding in iOS than there is just learning Swift. All right. Time to wrap things up with your picks of the week. Let me start on my right, Renee Ritchie. Your pick of the week.
So my pick of the week is in homage to Alex Lindsay not being here. And Canon has announced two new cameras.
Man, don't.
EOS R5 and the EOS R6.
Now, the EOS R5.
These are... But they have some caveats. So they're an amazing amount of technology. Like they can shoot 8K raw with C-Log, internally with really, really good codecs, which is like almost science fiction at this point. It's like the power of a cine camera into the body of like a tiny, tiny, normal looking camera. And there's places in the world that would never let you in with a cine camera, but will absolutely let you in with what looks like a small mirrorless camera. And it's light enough that you could put it up in drones and capture, 8K in areas where you're like Niagara Falls or areas you just couldn't normally get to, or 4K, it does 4K 60, sorry, 120 as well. So you can get downsampled 8K to 4. I'm sorry if I'm throwing around a lot of jargon.
No, this is good. This is good.
The 8K sensor will downsample to 4K and give you amazing, amazing imagery. It's expensive. It's around $4,000. The R6 is cheaper because with Canon, the higher numbers are lesser cameras. But it'll do the 4K stuff.
The R6 not full frame? And the R...
They're both full frame. I believe people are arguing about whether there's a slight crop or not on the R6. Some people say there is. Some people say there isn't. There's a lot of prototypes. Like Peter McKinnon has one of the prototypes, but we're not sure if that's reflective of final hardware or not. So we're waiting to see. The only drawback is that some people are incredibly impressed that this technology can exist at all. And others are kind of upset that the camera generates heat and will stop recording after about 20 minutes of, 4K 120 or of 8K. And then it has to cool down and then it will record less. Other people point out that at 8K with that bit rate, you are not going to find a memory card to record over 20 minutes.
You filled it up, yeah.
Anyway, or a battery that's going to last anyway. Yeah. So it's like the least of the problems. Like this is for very specialty use, but it is so light, it is so portable, and the Canon RF glass is just so modern and so good.
Oh God,
that
I'm in trouble.
It's almost like and it's got the flip out screen, which a lot of people like. It's almost like a YouTuber's, on your own cinematographer.
You could be Marques Brownlee, in other words.
because he's doing 8K RAW already. But I mean, some people were saying also like a crash camera. Before you would blow up a $100,000 IMAX camera Alexa camera to get that crash footage. And now you can get 8K crash footage off a $4,000, EOS. So I'm not sure if I love this camera yet. I'm going to have to wait for the reviews, but I love that it's showing, and Sony's going to be hugely competitive with their next camera too. I love where what I would call not even prosumer anymore. Like it's still expensive, but it's attainable beyond what anybody used to pay like $100,000 for these cameras ever imagined. And I love that all of this technology is coming into consumer level cameras.
There's an 8K video you can watch on YouTube if you have the capability. We'll stream it out at 720p so you can enjoy it and pretend you're seeing.
I love Canon color. I know people have very different opinions of it, but I love the way it's a little bit more magenta, but I love it.
I love Canon. And I have to say, I switched to Sony because I like the size of the mirrorless and so forth, but I still have a lot of Canon glass. Unfortunately, it's the EF glass, so I'd have to use an adapter with this new body, but
there's one that's super cheap. I have it. It's like $79, I think. And there's also a $300 one that includes ND filter. So you can slide the ND filter.
That would be
in
nice.
The adapter,
yeah,
which is really nice.
So since I have all that Canon glass,
that's what I was saying.
It's about the same price as a 5D Mark IV. It's not much more expensive than that. So
no,
it's
again, like the,
the cinema cameras that came out this year are 10 to 20,000. Right. And this does, those can record indefinitely. That's the huge advantage. It's what you're paying for the cinema camera for. But if you don't need to record 60 minutes of A-roll, you know, like some of us idiots do, these cameras are going to be fantastic.
And, oh, incidentally, it probably takes pretty good stills too.
Yeah.
45 megapixels.
That's a huge argument. It's funny because the same stuff we were arguing about cameras for years, they're not like, Sony said their next camera is probably going to be 12 megapixels. And people are freaking out and they're going, no, you want good 12 megapixels.
Right. That's an A7. Or you mean on the, yeah. You're talking about the A7S III or yeah. You're talking about on the phone? Yeah.
No, on the A7S III.
Yeah. You shouldn't go crazy over the size of the megapixels, although I kind of do.
Yeah. Unless they're pixel binning and that has other traits. I mean, it's a whole big thing.
Yeah. No, it's interesting because for a long time I thought Canon and Nikon would basically give up the mirrorless cameras to Sony because they had to preserve their existing business of, you know, DSLRs. This shows that they're willing to be aggressive. You know, this is they finally – and by the way, unlike the Sony, it has a compact flash slot as well as an SD card slot. There's some real – you know,
it has CF Express on the R5. So like I have a C500 Mark II and that uses CF Express. And you forget, I forget how fast it is until I have to pull off an SD card.
Yeah.
And it takes like 30 times longer than a CF Express.
That's
card.
Something for your Thunderbolt port. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very nice. I wish you hadn't mentioned it. I've been trying to pretend I don't know about it.
Alex would have done it if he was here.
I know he would have. Yeah. It's really interesting what it's going to do for video. That's what's surprising. Yeah. Yeah. Andy Anatko, pick of the week.
One of my three favorite word processors for the Mac and iOS has just gotten a really big upgrade. Ulysses is now up to version 20. It's was released just today, and it adds something that I've always kind of wanted for Ulysses, which is a sidebar. They call it a dashboard, but now as you're editing text, there is like a static third column to the right of what you're editing that will give you pretty much whatever you want, statistics on like what your word count is, how much time you've been working in this session, what your notes are, an outline of the document you're working on. It's a simple thing, and it's something that we've been seeing in one of my other favorite word processors, Scrivener, pretty much since the beginning. But it really is what makes this a wonderful full screen experience, whichever one that you're using. Ulysses, it's hard to explain the difference between Ulysses and Scrivener. They both have a strength in which they're really, really great at working on a collection of documents as opposed to like pages, which is open a document, close it, open a document, close it, open a document, close it. Ulysses and Scrivener are both really great when you're working on like a book where you have several chapters to work on, or if you're preparing a report for somebody and you have lots of different sections and you want to do a little bit of collaboration. Basically, you need to organize notes, you need to organize things while you're developing the one thing that you're trying to develop. The difference between the two is I think that Ulysses is a little bit cleaner, particularly when you're using it on iOS, particularly on the iPad. Scrivener is a lot more powerful. Scrivener is the one where all I'm doing is I have no idea if I want to write a book about this, but I keep having these ideas and I keep coming across these facts and these photos. I just want to toss them into a place so that just like the FBI murder specialist who's got I'm just putting photos and things on a big corkboard and tying string to them. Scrivener is the good thing to look at what you have and figure out what you're going to be building from it. So it's a little bit more complicated, but a lot more feature rich than Ulysses. But again, if you're just looking for a text editor that is good at managing even a larger project, Ulysses is pretty darn great. They've added a couple other things. They've added a grammar and a style checker. That's nice. I haven't checked this out yet, but they've done a dedicated revision mode within the dashboard that combines in-text annotations, spell check, and grammar and style check. Okay. I tried the other stuff. I haven't tried that yet. But this is it's great to see an already great app continuing to mature and continue to grow. The only other thing you need to know between an app like Ulysses and Scrivener is that Ulysses is a subscription-based app, so they charge $50 a year or $6 a month for it. So every year you have to renew it. Whereas Scrivener is just a flat $50, I think, for the app. And I think you own it. They do charge for upgrades in the future, but you don't have to keep if you're happy with the old one, you can keep going. But again, really great upgrade, really solid stuff. I've only been using it for now about 3 or 4 hours. It's one of those things where you add this one little feature and suddenly it becomes a much better and much different product.
Looks good. Looks good. Yeah, I had a Ulysses subscription for a long time, and then I thought, well, am I using this that much? But this, I really like Markdown editors, and I'm always looking for the best Markdown editor.
It's good because you can make it into a very, very minimalist sort of approach where you're just getting stuff down, which is one of the most important things about when you're writing for distance as opposed to speed.
Yep. Good pick. Ulysses.app if you want to learn more Mac and iOS. Mr. Dave Hamilton of the Mac Observer, what do you got for us?
I have one that came out on April 1st, and I missed it when it did, and it's Cloudflare for Families, and it's their DNS service. So Cloudflare offers their own DNS at 1.1.1.1, and then they also have an IPv6 version that's not quite as clean, because that's how IPv6 works. And it's that service at 1.1.1.1 is a service for just fast, efficient DNS lookups. They added two more. They added 1.1.1.2 and .3. .2 adds malware blocks to the list, and .3 takes the malware blocks and to them adds adult content. So you can put this into your router, and now you've got Cloudflare's malware and or, well, not and or, but either malware or malware and adult content blocking built right in. You don't have to think anything about it. And they do have IPv6 addresses for both of those so that you're actually covered, because a lot of these DNS things, if you're running IPv6 on your network, will, if your browser, if your computer does an IPv6 lookup, it'll bypass the IPv4 address that you've put in there and carefully crafted, and then it doesn't help. So they've thought of, and I've been using this for a couple of weeks now on the malware blocking, and it's picked up some things. It's actually been pretty good. So,
and it's free.
And it's free. That's the best price.
Which is really nice. No. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is a great way to keep your kids safe without them being able to get around it on any of their devices.
Well, just put that's it on the router. If your kids are smart enough to use Firefox, that has DNS over HTTPS.
Oh,
in it.
Man.
Yeah.
Dang them.
Right.
Actually, everybody's going to offer that. Even Safari's doing that now, DNS over HTTPS. Thank you, Dave. No, it's a good thing. It is, but it does kind of
add some confusion.
Gets around dad.
It means you can't parent by technology alone, and that's probably okay.
A reasonable thing. MacObserver.com. Dave Hamilton, great to have you.
Thanks for
always a pleasure. I really appreciate your perspective, especially on the ad tech stuff too. We got to keep talking because I just don't know what's happening in the world.
It's crazy.
It's changing as we speak. Andy Iannacco, when are you going to be on GBH this week?
I'm on a day early. I'm on Thursday. Looks like 11:30. But as usual, go to my Twitter at Iannacco, and I will usually tell people about the night before.
Awesome. Iannacco.com. Iannatko. He's also Iannacco on Twitter. Ooh. And Renee Ritchie, weekly at imore.com, and of course, pretty much every day at youtube.com/Renee Ritchie. Soon to be 8K, I have a feeling.
I'm trying. No, I can't take that kind of pain.
No.
But I'd like to be able to punch in to 4K out of an 8K frame. That would be great.
Ooh, that'd be nice. Yeah, you get all that extra room, and then you could say, I want this.
I can fix so many mistakes.
Yes, crop that out. Crop that out. Yeah, but of course, for your 8K workflow, now you'll need a Mac Pro.
Oh, God.
Do you think Apple Silicon will handle 8K as well as Intel? I bet it will.
Yeah, it'll handle it better. I mean, they've handled 4K better than Intel for years. They built their own custom encode and decode blocks for it, and they could do three streams back when Intel couldn't do one.
Right.
And they're going to have Final Cut running, and Final Cut, they'll have ProRes 8K, I'm certain, and it'll be a beast, but it'll be a manageable.
It's going to be everywhere. Video so high quality, it hurts your eyes.
Vincent
Delafaray is going to do his like 4K Fusion Red hybrid system again and fly over New York, and we'll all have to re-examine our lives.
Yeah, he's a Canon shooter, I think.
He was doing Reds like, and they were in helicopters and putting like five of them together to get a bigger frame. It's just like it never ends, Leo. It never ends.
That's right. You just can't keep up. That's why I'm going to stop buying cameras now. That's it. I'm done.
go back to analog where it's theoretically unlimited.
Film. I still have my Leica M3 and a Rola Tri-X, and I'm not afraid to use it.
That's a nice camera.
It is. It's a fun camera. It's a fun camera. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, Renee. Thank you, Dave. It's great to have all three of you. Thank you for joining us. We do Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday morning around 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time. That'd be 1800 UTC. If you want to tune in and watch live, you can. We have audio and video streams in real time at twit.tv/live. And when there's not a live show going on, the reruns are going on. So you can catch us any time of the day or night, 24/7. If you're doing that, visit the chat room, irc.twit.tv. They're doing the same. On demand, easy to find. Go to the website, twit.tv. Every show's there, including this one, twit.tv/MBW. Or we're also on YouTube. There's a Mac Break Weekly channel on YouTube. We're also on your favorite voice assistant. Just say, hey, you, play the Mac Break Weekly podcast. It'll play the latest edition. Best thing, though, is find your favorite podcast client, even Spotify. Subscribe, and that way you'll get it each week. The minute it's available, you don't have to think about it. Now I'm sad to say it's time to get back to work because break time is over. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Hey, folks. I'm Micah Sargent, host of Hands on iOS right here on the Twit Network. If you've got iOS devices or watchOS devices or tvOS device, any kind of Apple mobile device, you are going to want to check out Hands on iOS. It is the best way to make the most of those devices. I walk through tips, tricks, and everything in between, plus answer your questions. So be sure to check it out. It's twit.tv/HOI.